Welcome back. Here in the second hour of the program, Rich Bach will join us for a few minutes. We're going to get an update on the battle over control of the property at St. Stanislaus Koska Church in St. Louis. The battle taking place with the St. Louis Archdiocese. Usually in the press, it's with the St. Louis Archbishop, Raymond Burke. He happens to be the head of the St. Louis Archdiocese. Rich Bach will join us here in just a second. After that conversation, I want you to join us. Your reaction to this story. Of course, the news broke yesterday about a death threat that was issued via voicemail to the St. Louis Archbishop, Raymond Burke. And we'll get Rich's reaction to that here at the outset of our conversation. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727 is our call-in number. When our conversation here concludes, the remainder of the second hour of Issues Etc. is open lines for your questions and your comments. Rich Bach is spokesperson for the parishioners at St. Stan's. Rich, welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Todd.
Rich, your reaction to yesterday's news about the death threat to the Archbishop?
Well, we do not condone actions of that kind, I mean, especially any sort of violence. We at St. Stanislaus Koska are not aware of who this individual specifically is, but we do know he is not part of the 1,400-some-odd members of St. Stanislaus Koska. And we were saddened to hear of the event. You know, we don't want anything like that or want to perpetuate any sort of action such as that.
Now, what are you one of those who has the potential to fall under this interdict, as it's being called in the press?
No, I am not. I am a spokesperson for the parishioners. The St. Stanislaus Six, as they're calling them now, is a group that is the board of directors. They are the individuals that are representative of us, the board of parishioners of St. Stanislaus.
This is an unusual arrangement. At least I take it to be an unusual arrangement for the typical Catholic parish. How is the governance of that parish arranged, and how does that figure into the debate that is raging between the archdiocese and the board of directors?
Well, actually, it's not that unusual. It's unusual in appearance to most people now. Generations have passed since that has been instilled or established within the United States. But the original criteria that was used here in the United States is a model over what was constructed over in Europe. The villages or the towns would have provide the facilities themselves and take care of all the finances and the housing for the priests. The priests would in turn provide the spiritual needs for those people. And that's in turn what we had here. And the reason for that was because St. Stanislaus itself was placed in an area that was full of immigrants. And the Polish immigrants at that time were a small group. They would grow. The church itself was established in 1880. And they went from the current school building to the large church that exists now. And a diocese at the time did not have enough funds or monies to dedicate for the Poles, for the Polish immigrants. They were concentrating on the Germans and the Irish. And so they were given the blessing by, at that time, Bishop Kenrick to build their own if they could provide for it.
So in other words, in fact, we were talking about this off the air yesterday. To put it in a nutshell, the then parishioners of St. Stan's, because the diocese could not, in effect, build them a church building, took the cost upon themselves to do this and therefore hold deed to the property.
Well, correct. What happened was the people purchased the land in that area and then had it conveyed to the corporation. The corporation was established by Archbishop Kenrick at that time himself. And that corporation then was given the responsibility with a board of directors to run and manage that property. So they then in turn had the people put up the new structure, which is the building you see now. And that church was built in 1 year's time, not only with the monies that they gathered, but also with the blood, sweat, and tears, because there was a lot of energy from those individuals. The motivation was that they would have their own church. So, I mean, they put it up in 1 year's time, and the debt was retired within 3 years.
What is the estimated value of the property that's in question here?
Well, the estimated value is based upon figures that the Archdiocese itself has or holds under the basis for the insurance. And the property itself is estimated at $9.5 million. And the monies, which are actually a separate fund from the operating fund, it's called a Restoration Renovation Maintenance Fund, is $1.5 million. And that money was specifically donated for that purpose to maintain the property by people whether they were alive or whether through bequeathments and estates, so that future generations could actually have benefits of that property.
What is the Archdiocese claim here?
Well, the Archdiocese says that we are not commonplace with the other structures, with the other churches in the Archdiocese itself, that we are unique in our own being. And in saying so, it's not true, because St. Francis Xavier has its own corporation that is a lay board that runs that church, that is responsible for the same capacity that we have as a corporation on our church. And then there's another one out in West County, which is St. Anselm's, which also leases the property back to the diocese to be used as a church. And then you have St. Vincent de Paul and a number of other churches that are owned by the order, by the specific priest orders, and they are not under the archdiocese, specific archdiocese control holding of deed.
I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about the battle over the control of the property of St. Stan's here in St. Louis. Rich Bach is our guest spokesperson for the parishioners of St. Stan's. In about 5 minutes, we'll open up the phone lines for your thoughts on this issue. Rich, what does the board of St. Stan's want?
Well, one of the proposals, one of the last proposals that we gave them was, why can't we not mirror the same situation that's allowed out at St. Anselm's? We'll go ahead and lease the property back to the Archdiocese for its use for $0, and in thus still maintain the hold, the ownership of the property, and then we'll also set up a separate fund where we will go ahead and put monies in there equal to the amount of 1 year's of operating costs and any other expenses that the priests would deem necessary for that, into that fund, so that they could operate out of that and still in turn have the fund to maintain the property and take care of, you know, the land and the buildings. And the diocese has refused that because they basically want total control of the property. They have asked that the trust and the other documentation that they've given us would basically put three individuals, the dean of the north side, the vicar general, and the pastor, as the three officers controlling both the trust and the building property themselves. And that would not leave control within the laity itself. And, you know, you have to understand that if this were to have happened prior to this time, back in the 50s and 60s, we wouldn't even be in this discussion today, because that property would not be here. You have a church that is less than five blocks away called St. Laborious that looks like a war ruin right now, because it was under the control and protection of the diocese, and they have just let it disintegrate.
Yesterday, we had Dr. James Hitchcock of St. Louis University. He's a professor of history there at St. Louis University on the program. We talked about a number of things, but we did also get his take on the dispute over the property of St. Stan's. Here's what he had to say.
Well, I think strictly speaking, the Archbishop's position is an unassailable one. That is, in the Catholic system of things, we're not a Congregationalist church, and individual parishes cannot, under church law, own their own property and operate independently of the diocese. So I think the Archbishop's here on perfectly solid ground. I think there are historical reasons why that situation developed. There's a group called the Polish National Church, which broke away from Catholic Church sometime 100 years or more ago. And according to some plausible accounts, St. Stanislaus got title to its own property sort of as an inducement for them not to join the Polish National Church. It's also true, although I think no one wants to say this publicly, in 1891, when Archbishop Peter R. Kenrick of St. Louis approved that arrangement, he was actually pretty senile. I think the Archbishop is clearly within his rights here.
Your reaction to what Dr. Hitchcock had to say there, his assessment of the situation, Rich?
Well, I think it's a shame that people are referring to an individual who has passed on as senile. He doesn't have the ability to defend himself, number one. But number two, you know, he has a lot of documentation verifying, Archbishop Kenrick, that the growth in the diocese at that time was a direct responsibility and correlation to his interaction with the immigrants that were coming into the area. There are several immigrant churches that were founded and established during that time. It was a tremendous growth rate, which was never even achieved after those times in the diocese itself for Catholics. some of the most beautiful churches were built here in St. Louis during his time. And I think the man was a visionary in what he did, because he had modeled it over what was occurring in Europe and still exists today in Europe, as well as there are other churches in the U.S. and Canada. There's a church up in Chicago, which the Diocese of Chicago had closed, and then the people purchased it back 3 years later and reopened it, and they are not answering to the Diocese of Chicago. They answer to the congregation itself that's there, answers to a bishop at the Vatican rather than to the Archbishop of Chicago. So we are not a unique situation, and it is not a standard modus operandi. In fact, each bishop can establish in his own diocese what he wants. That's what canon law gives him the right to do. And that's one of our arguments, that basically canon law is a Roman application. I mean, it's the Holy Roman Empire, and it's a consultative operative law where the person that is in charge, in this case, the archbishop, can make the decision regardless of what other people tell him or ask him.
So it's your contention that Archbishop Raymond Burke, if he wants to, could permit this. His hands are not tied in the arrangement that he would make with St. Stan's.
That's correct.
Does St. Stan want to operate independently of the St. Louis Archdiocese?
Well, I mean, that's actually, you know, a misnomer, that we operate independently, because the priest himself still reported to the archbishop. They're under the auspices of the archbishop. Everything spiritual that occurred at St. Stanislaus was under the guidance of the pastor. The board of directors and the parishioners weren't the ones telling the priest what to do at Mass or what kind of services to hold. We basically controlled the property and the money so that we could keep that building to the shape that it is now, in the condition that it exists. And so, you know, we still answered to them. We provided them with money. We were never a burden as far as, you know, the cost of anything from the diocese. They never provided us with any money. But we also supported them through their annual campaigns that they had for capital money. They also had extra capital campaigns, like a few years back they had Returning God's Gifts, which was a large campaign that we contributed to. And then their weekly tax, we still pay that even to this day during this entire scenario.
Is there a priest currently serving St. Stan's?
No, there is not. The archbishop pulled the priest at the end of July in reaction to the board of directors taking away his signatory rights over the operating fund that existed there. We as parishioners had questions as to some of those expenditures, and we did not receive answers to it. In fact, we requested that an independent third-party audit be done of those operating funds, and we still to this day have not received that.
Where is this going, Rich? Where do you envision this? Because it does seem to be at loggerheads at this particular point.
Well, I mean, we're in a situation right now where the bishop is bullying us and threatening us to do what he says. You know, he's making the comment that we've given them everything they've wanted, wherein, in fact, we have not gotten any of the considerations that we deserve. Every time we present them with a proposal, it gets ignored. There are situations where there's communications that are just go unheard. You know, we would like to have a communication, a dialogue with the diocese. We would like for it to remain Roman Catholic. The people of the St. Stanislaus Parish would like to remain Roman Catholic. Unfortunately, the archbishop is the one that has abandoned us.
And as to this mini excommunication that we discussed a little bit before, does this mean that the six that have been at least warned about this interdict, at least warned about it if it hasn't been officially issued yet,
correct,
are they free to commune at any other parish?
Well, while they are in this process, yes. And then they have a formal appeal process where they do not accept the interdict, and they actually file through an official process through the Vatican where they deny that it exists and they deny the administrative rights of the diocese itself.
Rich Bach is spokesperson for the parishioners of St. Stanislaus Koska Church here in St. Louis. Rich, thank you for being our guest.
Thank you very much, Todd.
By the way, Jamie Allman of the St. Louis Archdiocese has agreed to come on Issues, etc. It's simply a matter of scheduling a date for him. That might be a little bit difficult coming up because my vacation begins on Saturday, but we will have him on to talk about the same issue from the perspective of the Archdiocese and the Archbishop himself. So Jamie Allman will be on a little bit later on Issues, etc., as we are able to schedule a date. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I like your reaction to this story. Now, see, I come from the perspective of a church that is, its polity, its governance is largely congregational. That is, in this sense. Some might raise eyebrows. But in terms of who owns the property, who dispenses of assets when it comes to local congregations, in my church body, I think without exception, probably, unless there's one I'm just some rare instance, churches own their own property. Even if they're started as a mission and someone else, maybe say the larger group of congregations, pitch in to buy the property and all that kind of stuff, which happens all the time, sooner or later, the deed devolves to the corporation that is the congregation there. And that means they own their own property. If they decide to sell it, they can sell it. They don't have to ask anybody's permission. If they decide to leave the denomination, by and large, I think without exception, as long as everything's being done according to the rules, they take their property with them. As long as they are, at least in a lot of the constitutions of our congregation, I should clarify, if you remain Lutheran, you get to go. Now, if you decide to depart from a Lutheran doctrine, you forfeit your property. That's the way most congregations' constitutions work. But the corporation of the congregation owns the property and can dispense with it as they see fit. So I look at this, and this sounds somewhat foreign to me. What would you do if, let's say you're a Roman Catholic parishioner, what would you do if the archdiocese said, now you have had deed to your property for a long, long time, now we're talking about over 100 years, but that we've kind of permitted up until this point because of exigent circumstances. Things have changed. Let's do it the way we do it with the rest of the parishes. We would like the property. And we're not talking about a small amount of money here. We're talking about the estimated value of $9 million. That's no small amount. What would you do? How would you react to it? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines, issues, etc. For the remainder of this hour, I'd like your reaction to this story. Last night, the story was a death threat. That has been shown, at least according to the press reports, to be someone unassociated with St. Stan's and someone who's already been incarcerated. Apparently, they were pretty swift in their investigation of the death threat against the Archbishop Raymond Burke. Who do you think is right on this St. Stan's issue? When you watch the news, I was watching it last night, and you see the various sides appearing. Jamie Allman will appear on the news. He'll talk about the bishop's position. Then you'll have people who are explaining the congregation's position. Where do you fall on this? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Ray is up first. He calls from St. Louis. Ray, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
I take it Mr. Bach is no longer on the radio.
No, he's Bach, gone. We let Bach go, yes.
Oh, okay. I had a question for him, but my question is this. It seems to me that, from what I've heard as a casual observer, it seems to me like the equitable thing to do is, to, you know, for the Archbishop to let St. Stanislaus just be on its way. Spiritually, they've always been in lockstep with the archdiocese. I'm a little curious there. But my other question is this, really, is that given the fact that, you know, the Archbishop has threatened excommunication, the Board of Directors, seems to be doing what the parishioners want. I mean, the parishioners voted, I guess, a couple weeks ago, almost unanimously, not to give the property back to the archdiocese. So my question is this: if that's the case, and the archbishop is going to excommunicate the entire board of directors, then why isn't that enough? Why isn't it enough for the archbishop to just walk away? But I guess I heard Mr. Allman on the news the other day, and he said that there is a possibility that the archdiocese would proceed with litigation against the parish to get the property back. That to me seems at odds with what they're saying. It's not about the money, and then it is about the money, but it's not really about the money. They're just suing to get the church back. Can you? I'm hoping you can provide a little insight on that, because that doesn't. If they're not concerned about the money and they've excommunicated the board, why should it be that there's anything more to decide? They've been excommunicated and be on their way. But
you make a good point there. Now let's clear up a few things first of all, and that is, by the way, I have the same confusion, Ray, because if this is not about the money or about the value of the property per se. Then, and if this is a pastoral issue, in essence, will you be under the control of the archdiocese? Then those who won't would would then be disciplined by the rules of the church. A couple things. First of all, letting them go does seem like a pretty equitable solution, if it's not about the money. If it's not about the money. That's my personal opinion. Now, as to the issue of excommunication, it's been called a mini-excommunication. Yesterday, Dr. Hitchcock explained to us that historically an interdict, which is what this is being technically called, an interdict, is something even greater than an excommunication in its scope, because an entire group of people would be at least temporarily banned from receiving the sacraments. Now, there's a difference between what's called the lesser ban and the greater ban, and I think the Roman Church, as well as the historic church, recognizes this. There's a difference between a priest or a bishop saying, I am going to ask you temporarily, for the time being, to refrain from the sacraments, and I will refuse to dispense them to you as a matter of church discipline, with the view of restoring them after further dialogue and resolution. That's called the lesser ban. The greater ban would be excommunication. That is, you have now cut yourself off from the fellowship of the church. You are no longer a fit recipient of the sacraments, and unless there is repentance, this will be a permanent state. Those are two different steps, and it appears to me, and by the way, the bishop has not written any documents on this. He hasn't issued an interdict yet, as far as I know. He has threatened to do so. It seems as though what the bishop has done, the archbishop has done, is the lesser ban, kind of the warning shot, saying, for the time being, I am going to not permit these six individuals to have the sacrament. So let's make sure it's clear that there has been no formal excommunication. That has not occurred, strictly speaking. But if it's not about the money, that would seem to be, why litigate if it's not about the money? Steve, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Steve's up next. Welcome.
Excellent program you have
Thank
today.
You.
I'd like to mention, I think that they went toe-to-toe with Mr. Regali at St. Louis University, Mr. Biondi at St. Louis University, and Mr. Regali went toe-to-toe about the same issue a few years back with the hospital money that came up when they sold the hospitals on Grand Avenue. And Mr. Biondi came out on top, and Mr. Regali went back to Lyndall Boulevard without any of the money that he was seeking from them.
Was it litigated, if you remember?
It was resolved, and it was resolved to the fact that Reverend Biondi had right to that money because it was his property or their property, and they had the lay board like Richard stated before. And that seems to be an accepted way now, because that was precedent, I believe, in my mind. Now, as I talk to you from within sight of Zion Lutheran Church up here in a 2100 block of Benton Street, I think of St. Laborius that was brought up earlier. My wife belonged to St. Laborius. And they had their 125th anniversary, and Archbishop May attended this. And
Steve, can you hold on a second? I want you to get the rest of this out, but we're right up against the break. Will you hang on for me, please?
I will. Put me on hold.
All right, Steve, thank you very much. When we come back, we'll let Steve finish his point there. I think it's a point well worth listening to as we talk about the debate and the battle over the property of St. Stan's in St. Louis. Where do you fall on this? Open lines for 25 minutes when we come back.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
How is the Old Testament prophet Joshua a type of Christ? Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for February is the Concordia Commentary on Joshua. This commentary focuses on the faithfulness of God, how he kept his covenant promises, and how these promises are fulfilled in Christ. The Concordia Commentary on Joshua is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can browse on our website at issuesetc.org. Read about the history, culture, and archaeology surrounding the Promised Land in this Concordia Commentary on Joshua. The cost is $42.99 plus shipping and handling, 1-800-325-3040. Or issuesetc.org. The Concordia Commentary on Joshua, our Issues, Etc. book of the month for February.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. PBS will lose $10 million in government funding under President Bush's budget. Between that and stiffening competition from cable channels, the public broadcasting system is looking for creative ways to get more of your money. One suggestion is a trust fund. Steve Jordahl reports.
You know, Theo, I never get tired of telling people about our funders.
Me either. I could do it at least once every day.
The message usually comes between programs.
Booba was made possible by contributions to your PBS station, by viewers like you. Thank you.
But the money given voluntarily isn't enough. So PBS has gone to Capitol Hill looking for the kind of contribution that some might call forced. David Williams of Citizens Against Government Waste says the latest proposal is a congressionally established trust fund that would make the public network less dependent on an annual budget.
Whether it's a trust fund or however they finagle this, the fact of the matter is that taxpayers don't need to be financing this organization.
Tim Graham of the Media Research Center says it's an old idea.
So what they want to do is create an endowment so that they're insulated from Congress and from the taxpayer, so they can go do whatever they want.
Some say the network has outlived its usefulness, but dismantling it would be politically impossible.
This is like any other government program. They're going to use Ernie and Burr to defend the entire system. And that's the way the game is played.
He says it makes more sense to wean the public off PBS gradually. For Family News in Focus, I'm Steve Jordahl.
PBS did not return our calls for comment. The network has 350 television stations and 700 radio affiliates. It was started in 1964 under the Johnson administration. Family News in Focus is a production of Focus on the Family. You can find us on the web at familynewsinfocus.org. I'm Bob Dittmer.
It's a long-standing tradition at AM 850 KFUO. Every Sunday morning, we carry two live worship broadcasts from area churches. At 8 o'clock, we carry the service from Peace Lutheran Church in South St. Louis County. The Reverend Dennis Castens is the pastor. Then at 10:45, we broadcast our second service, this time from Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, where the Reverend John Temple is the senior pastor. If it serves you well, listen to one or both of our Sunday morning worship broadcasts on AM 850 KFUO, inspirational Christian radio for the world. Israel's conquest of the Holy Land comes alive in our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, the Concordia Commentary on Joshua. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about this commentary on our website, issuesetc.org. The Concordia Commentary on Joshua, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February.
This is the final half hour of Open Lines, Issues, Etc. for the next 10 days. I'm going on vacation. When I get back, we'll do more Open Lines. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. In the next hour, we're going to be talking with, first of all, with Paul Miller of Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis about Christian education in the inner city. Everything's a little more difficult to do in the inner city. What about Christian education? We'll also be talking with Dr. Adolf Harstadt, part two of our series on our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for February, the Concordia Commentary on Joshua. We will talk about divine warfare in the last 25 minutes of Issues, Etc. It's open lines. Anything you want to talk about, call now, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. On the line with us is Steve from St. Louis. We're talking about the battle over St. Stan's property that's so much in the news. Steve, pick up where you left off.
All right. What the story was that my wife and her mother and family belonged to St. Laborious Church at Hogan and North Market Street. They had their 125th anniversary, and Archbishop May attended this anniversary, and he spoke on the pulpit, and the place was positively packed. They had a priest up there. It was so vibrant, so alive. He brought Moorbund Parish back from the phoenix out of the ashes, so to speak. It was just a fabulous rebirth of this church, and the Archbishop was absolutely amazed and impressed positively with all this wonderful positive activity with the church here on North Market and Hogan Street. Then he complimented and he said, "I will never close your parish. This is too good to do anything to damage this." And this was a statement that he said himself, and this is a matter of trusting the Archbishop by what they say, not what they do, but what they say. And it wasn't long after that he got wind that they had over $2.5 million in restoration money that were being let was being let out on contracts for the church here to maintain it and bring it back to immaculate shape like St. Stanislaus is in. It wasn't long after that he shoved that priest into the hinterlands. He brought his closure man in. They started taking the money out of the church and sending to Lindell Boulevard for the greater good, they said. And it wasn't a year and a half later, it was closed, and now all we have up here at North Market and Hogan Street is a pile of bricks, like Richard said. It's a darn shame. And I tell you, yesterday I heard Jamie Allman on the radio. He made I took great umbrage with a comment he made that the rectory at St. Stanislaus is a dump. I tell you, I knew Gene Krestowski and his sister. His sister was the caretaker up there at the rectory. And that was impeccably maintained then as it is now. It's immaculate inside. And it's quite a misstatement on his part to slur the people up at St. Stanislaus. I'd like to thank you for your opportunity.
Well, Steve, thank you very much. I appreciate bringing that to our attention. I'd like to hear from some supporters of the diocese, if they're 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And if you weren't listening before the break, he mentioned Jamie Allman, the spokesperson for the Archdiocese. He has agreed to come on and speak with us. It's just a matter of getting him into the schedule. 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. Now, you know, the cynic in me says that money does tend to attract attention, especially big wads of money that are sitting in endowments or accounts tend to attract attention. And don't fool yourselves, folks. I mean, the church, church officials, church leaders, and I'm not talking here exclusively about the Church of Rome, when they sniff money, They may not necessarily come in and engage in what sounds like a hostile takeover within the bounds of church law, but they get interested. It happens. Well, money makes the world grow round, and at least in the human sense, money also makes the church grow round. Do you think this is just about the money? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or is this really about just bringing all the congregations of the St. Louis Archdiocese into conformity with what is, well, while not exclusively the norm, generally the norm of how properties are owned and how monies are dispersed and how things work. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Are you surprised at how much media attention has been given to this debate, a single congregation and its archdiocese? Why so much media attention? It's open lines, issues, etc. Anything you want to talk about. Earlier in the day, we had a conversation with Aaron Wolf about the Middle East peace process. You probably read the headline as well yesterday. Ceasefire, but will it last? 2.5 days, it didn't last, at least not as an absolute ceasefire. Aaron said, look, one of the biggest enemies of the peace process there is Christian Zionism. Maybe you'd like to talk about that. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Open lines, issues, etc. for anything you want to discuss. And now I said, the cynic in me says, there's money there, there's a restoration fund. Immediately upon the heels of the story last night about the death threat to the archbishop, There was a story that talked about the closing of various parishes in the St. Louis Archdiocese. Now, parishes are closed because there's not enough attendance, or parishes are closed because they are not able to sustain themselves with offerings. There's all sorts of reasons. I'm sitting there watching this, and again, this is my private opinion, but I'm saying it's hard not to at least be tempted to connect the dots. Between here we are closing parishes because money is tight, and here is a parish that apparently is healthy and running well on its own, but it's managing its own assets, property, and restoration fund. And there's the archdiocese saying, we'd like that, please. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Peter's up next. He calls from St. Louis. Peter, welcome.
Hello?
Yes, Peter, welcome.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm just calling about the comment from yesterday by the professor giving the deed to the parish to avoid going with the Polish National Church. And that's not the case because Polish National Church was established in early 20s, some 40 years after St. Stanislaw.
So you're taking issue with Dr. Hitchcock's reading of the history there?
That's kind of 40-year disparity, basically. So it wasn't the motivation to set up the St. Stanislaw the way it was set up to prevent it to go with the Polish National Church, because the church was established that happened 40 years later. And precisely from those same reasons that Polish immigrants built the churches and they've been later on taken away from them. So at some point they just got nervous and went their own way.
Oh, so you're saying that with regard to the Polish church that's in question, there were continued property disputes there with other parishes?
No. What I'm saying is basically that the whole story of Polish National Church going its own way happened for some 40 years after establishing St. Stanislaw here in St. Louis.
Peter, thank you very much. Okay, now, you know, we'll have to take Peter at his word, and further research would have to indicate whether or not, well, what exactly Dr. Hitchcock did have to say. I know what he said. We had it on tape, and we played it earlier in our conversation with Rich Bach, whether he intended to say that it was the founding of the independence of the Polish church that brought about these things. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk with Paul in South St. Louis. Paul, welcome.
Thank you. I agree with so far with what's been said about St. Stanislaus. But I think I have a little different idea from a historical perspective and a church historical perspective. You remember at the time of Henry VIII, the church owned about 20% of the land, and that money was made by virtue of owning land. And part of the reason for the Reformation in England was Henry said, "I want my land back." And that may be part of the reason for this, too.
Do you see this as something of a historical parallel then, Paul?
I do.
Thank you very much. All right, what about the rest of you? I mean, so far it seems to be kind of running against the Archdiocese. Are the supporters of the Archdiocese decision and actions here in our audience? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Michael calls from St. Louis. Michael, welcome.
Hey, I heard you say earlier that Jamie had a scheduling conflict.
No, I have a scheduling conflict. I'm going on vacation. Jamie agreed to be with us on Monday, but I'm not going to be here on Monday.
Okay.
Jamie Allman, that is.
It seems that he's making a couple $100,000 to do this, but yet I've noticed on several stations he doesn't show up. Not only does he do a horrible job, but he doesn't even do his job.
Well,
he's
Michael,
a disgrace.
Michael, I'm sorry, I can't comment on that. I've seen him all over the press, and in terms of the job he's been doing, now, you might disagree with the position he's taking as the spokesman for the Archdiocese. You might disagree with that. But as far as being a spokesman for the Archdiocese, I'll disagree with you. I think it was a brilliant decision to pick someone who's media savvy. In some ways, unprecedented. One of the problems with, I mean, as someone who's, you know, not a long time in the media, but some time in the media, one of the problems with communicating with the hierarchy of a diocese is that they sometimes don't have a lot of interest in communicating with the media. And I've seen more of Jamie Allman and heard more of him than just about anybody lately in the St. Louis market. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Herman calls from Illinois. Herman, welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. A while ago, you mentioned about the organizational policy within, like, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And just following on that theme for Lutherans, I've been checking nationwide in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And as you reiterated there with the Missouri Synod, if congregations remain Lutheran and go to another Lutheran body that is organized, and that could be the Missouri Synod, Wisconsin Evangelical, or number of the others, they leave with their property if they follow their constitutional provision.
Right.
And currently, about close to 400 congregations have left the ELCA. And I would say that in a blink of an eye, that could probably double. And they're leaving both as congregations, and people are leaving as groups within existing congregations and forming new independent congregations that do not come under that provision. And this is probably going to continue, and we will see a growing number of congregations and smaller Lutheran church bodies due to this in the near future, I would say.
Herman, thank you very much. Just to clarify on that issue, in my church body, most congregations have their own constitution, which usually has Article 2. Article 2 is the article in the Constitution which says, this is our doctrinal stance. And it's pretty brief usually, but it talks about adherence to the Scripture and the confessions, and generally speaking, the unaltered Augsburg Confession and the Lutheran Confessions, the Book of Concord, giving a date for this is our confession of faith. Now, later on, there are provisions in most constitutions that say if there's ever a doctrinal dispute and the congregation were to split for any reason, that group which retains fidelity to the Scripture and the confessions retains the property because they are, theologically speaking, the congregation. They remain the congregation. The one that deviates from the adherence to the Scripture and the Lutheran confessions forfeit the property because they've ceased to be the congregation there, as it's identified, because in Lutheran parlance, congregations are defined not by their incorporation under the state, they're defined by their theological position. That's why we call ourselves a confessional church body. At least it used to be why we called ourselves a confessional church body, at least on paper. Now, the question of whether or not they are faithful to it beyond paper is a whole nother ball of wax that I won't get into right now, because I don't have that much time left in open lines. Amy calls from her car. Amy, welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. In regards to St. Stanislaus, if they do give up the control to the archdiocese, they will lose all control and decision-making ability with regards to how their money is spent, where it is put in regards to investments. They will lose all their ability to hire contractors, et cetera, of their decisions. They will not be able to do the repairs in a timely manner. We've had several problems with our Catholic Church in the area with regards to this. The Archdiocese can nix projects, or they can delay them. They can decide whether or not a building needs carpet or what color, and there is no recourse for which the parish itself can even go above the decision-making body to appeal their decision. So I really applaud them for holding their ground, because if the Archdiocese had any legal hold on this, they would have taken care of it a long time ago.
Interesting, Amy. Well, I'm thinking about it in terms of my experience as a parish pastor. If the parish had not only owned its own property, but been able to make decisions about upkeep on its own property, and we would have had to have appealed to or made put requests up the line to some higher level of hierarchy to not only pay for it, but to get out the contracts and to get bids and to make the decision about what was going to be done, the church might have fallen apart. I mean, the reason we were able to maintain the church as we did was because the property was controlled by the board of trustees and the voters of the congregation. It's that simple. We didn't have to ask anybody permission. And I know that Amy's point there is well taken with regard to St. Stan's. They can control the money and how the place is kept up. And we've had two callers already mention the fact that other churches that have come under Archdiocese control, one of them is now a pile of bricks. So anybody out there supporting the Archdiocese, I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc. We're taking your phone calls on the battle over the control of the property at St. Stan's in St. Louis, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. In the next hour, two guests will be talking with Paul Miller about inner-city Christian education, and we'll also speak with the author of our Issues, Etc. book of the month for February, the Concordia Commentary on Joshua, part two of our series this month with him on divine warfare today. Adolf Harstad will be our guest in the last 25 minutes. Virginia calls from St. Louis. Virginia, welcome.
Hi, I'm calling. I think it's all about money. we've had, the board of directors have done an excellent job with our parish representing the parishioners, and I think the value of the property has gone up, and I just think it's all about money. I've been a parishioner there for many, many years.
So you're a member of St. Stan's?
I'm sorry, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about the money as far as you're concerned?
As far as I'm concerned, it's all about the money. The property has gone up in value. There's townhouses around there, and we built a new Polish Heritage Center with funds donated by people, and the value of the property has just gone up, and it's just all about money.
Well, okay, Virginia, a question before I let you go. Someone in favor of the Archdiocese would say none of that's going to change if we gain control of the property and the assets there. It'll all still be maintained. Do you believe that?
No.
Virginia, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk with Dan, who calls from St. Louis. Dan, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes, sir. You know, I was born and raised in St. Louis, baptized Catholic, you know, all the families Catholics all our lives and whatnot, and I'm pretty close to 60 years old. And I think I heard a rumor that this Jamie Allman, I don't particularly like the guy because he was a news person, and I don't really care for a lot of news people to begin with. But I understand he's only been a Catholic for a few years. I don't know, 3-4. I've heard different rumors on this.
How is that relevant, Dan?
Well, to be the spokesman for the whole Archdiocese of St. Louis area, he's not taking into consideration the feelings of, say, someone like myself, you know, almost 60 years old, used to living here all my life, used to dealing with the church and whatnot, and he's the spokesman for the whole Archdiocese. And it's sort of like a slap in the face that everybody that's been true to the faith, and you have an outsider. It's like, I don't know what they used to say in the old movies, or you got to hire a good mouthpiece.
Well, okay, and, Dan, thank you.
But do you hear what I'm saying? I mean, a lot of people, I think, feel this way about this guy. I seen him on TV today, and when we go to get ashes on Ash Wednesday, we're lucky if we get a little thumbprint on our forehead.
All right, Dan, thank you. Look, we'll ask Jamie when we get him on about his tenure, and these are the kind of objections that get raised. Unfortunately, I think what we're hearing there and that and another caller before is shoot the messenger. If you got a problem, by the way, those of you, and look, I sympathize with you, but if you got a problem, I think you take it up with Jamie's boss, Archbishop Burke. And I should point out, however, that one of the first things I asked Rich Bach when we had him on just a few minutes ago was if he was one of those who was under the interdict at St. Stan's, and he's not a member of St. Stan's. He's a Roman Catholic. But he had no horse in the race either, and he's a spokesman too. This is kind of the role of spokespersons. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Roger calls from St. Charles. Roger, welcome.
Hi. The only thing I'm going to throw into the fire is, if you're going to be a Catholic, you've got to be a Catholic, and you've got to follow their rules. Otherwise, you're not really a Catholic. Now, if you want to make up your own rules and make up your own church, go ahead. But I'm lost here. They want their money more than they want their religion, or their I guess that's what I'm saying. They want their beautiful church more than they want their religion.
Roger, thank you. Well, according to Rich Bach, he talked of them before, St. Stan's is very interested in remaining a Catholic church. So as far as we can tell, they're very interested in remaining Catholic. What they don't want is, well, you got a good point there. First of all, if you're going to be a member of this church body, the Roman Church, then you cannot be selective, either doctrinally in practice or in the polity, about how you want this to work, how you want the property to be used. Now, that seems to be the crux of the issue. Will an exception be made for St. Stan's? They've asked for an exception, by the way. And are they really that exceptional? But your point is well made. If you're going to be Catholic, normally speaking, you come in and then you don't say later, well, okay, we don't want to abide by this rule or that rule. But I would point out that the precedent really lies here with on the side of the congregation, because it was the diocese when the parish was built that said, we're not willing to fund this, and the people said, we are, and they built it, and they got deed to the place. I should correct myself, however. We did get a call. Rich Bach, who we spoke to earlier, is the spokesperson for St. Stan's, is in fact a member of St. Stan's. He's not under the interdict. He's not a member of the board, but he is a member, and he isn't a paid spokesperson. But I do need to say this in Allman's defense, however. What a spokesperson gets paid is irrelevant. The question is the Archdiocese right in what it's doing? A few more minutes left here. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It does sound like Mr. Allman will have his work cut out for him when he comes on the program in any event, but I think he's up to it. 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. You know what strikes me as even more... This is what I have a bigger problem with, and I'll just be quite honest with you. The money, the property, in the end, it's all going to burn, okay? So don't worry about that. The money and the property are all going to burn. I know that it represents the sweat and the hard work and the dedication of generations of Catholics in that parish. The biggest scandal here is that they haven't been provided a priest. That's the biggest scandal to me. Fight over the money and the property all you want, but at least you should maintain the priesthood there among those people. Don't withdraw their priest. Go ahead and take our property, but don't take the Word of God from us or the sacraments from us. That's my concern. And I think it goes a little deeper and more enduring than... the dollars and the cents. Martha, welcome to Issues, etc.
Yes, I live in Florissant, close to the Gateway College of Evangelism, and I used to go over there and see the St. Stanislaus Museum all the time, and it isn't there anymore, and I questioned about that. Are you still there?
Yeah, we've only got about 10 seconds.
About that, and someone said that someone had taken that away, and I just want to know, is there any connection? Does anyone out in the radio know, is there any connection between that museum that was there and this church?
Martha, thank you. I do not know. I can't give you an answer to that one. Oh, you know, it is an amazing... I mentioned before that the church is not immune to the lure of the money. No, money's got to be a part of the situation. But Christians are very much like everyone else. You throw a big wad of money into the middle of a room and half of them will lunge for it. And maybe that's what we're watching here. My biggest concern, I'll say it again, is not who ends up getting the property. That may be decided by the courts, for all I know. My biggest concern is that the faithful at St. Stan should not be denied their priest, which apparently at this point they are. We'll be right back to talk about inner-city Christian education with Paul Miller.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.